Welcome to the Inner Peace and Other Cool Shit podcast, the show that helps you find freedom from anxiety, overthinking, worry, and stress. I'm Siobhan Friel, a fellow human being, transformational coach, and your new friend. Come and hang out with me as we explore a whole new understanding of the human experience so you can enjoy life with more peace and ease.
Hello, welcome to Inner Peace and Other Cool Shit. It's been longer than usual since I got to hang out with you, so I'm very happy to be doing so today. Although, when I say hang out with you, I'm actually staring at a wall lined with cushions with my head under a blanket, as the place I'm staying is quite echoey to record a podcast. But it still kind of feels like we're spending time together, even though your face is a cushion to me. I've been doing some travelling and whatnot, and even though I tried to keep up with the regular schedule, it just became hard and shit, and I frowned a lot. But it is funny to notice how long it took me to come to the calm and obvious choice of simply having a longer space between episodes. Lol at my human brain. Anyway, today's episode is part two of our exploration into the myths and misconceptions around what it means to experience more peace, clarity, and ease in life, and less anxiety, overwhelm, worry, panic, stress, or insert your own favourite uncomfortable feeling not otherwise mentioned. If you haven't listened to part one already, you might want to go and do that, which just gives a bit more colour and background to the topic, but you don't really need to. I'll put the link in the show notes if you do. At the end of that episode, I invited you to send in your potential myths or misconceptions for a possible debunking, and we'll come on to those soon, thanks to all who wrote me. So the purpose of this exploration is to really show how imperfect, messy, unpolished, and disorganized this stuff can feel. And what do I mean by this stuff? I mean, when you are gently trying to move toward more peace in life, less worry and overwhelm, and to feel more at ease in your life and less wrangled by your own overthinking and racing mind. And maybe you're doing that with the help of a therapist or a teacher or a coach or a patient friend or a dog. Or for most, you're navigating this yourself by listening and learning from others and using your own senses as a guide. I have a podcast which may help the people that are doing it the DIY Explorer method called You're the Person to Call Bullshit and All That Anxiety Advice or something like that. I'll link to it in the show notes for you. Now, I noticed before I said, I mean, when you are gently trying to move toward more peace, etc. But most of us, and me included for many, many years, don't do this gently at all, at least to begin with and until we've exhausted all the other methods. In fact, many of us that may experience a lot of overwhelm and worry and panic and stress and anxiety, we begin any kind of journey of wanting to change this by comparing ourselves to others, which, of course, is comparing ourselves to their outside, their often highly curated or controlled view, and we give no thought to their inner life. So inevitably, we find ourselves lacking against this unfair comparison. And so we diagnose ourselves as fucked up, broken, worthless shit, that we can't handle life, etc., etc. I've said all of those things to myself many times. And then we start from there. We start trying to help ourselves from this diminished, dark place of lack and self-loathing, which often means a rather punishing and difficult start. It's like weighing ourselves down with a huge, heavy backpack at the start of a 400-meter race. And again, me too, I did this. Aren't we silly billies? So after this innocently self-inflicted, heavy, difficult start, we plod along, trying various methodologies, modalities, ideologies, and whatnot along the way. I've spoken before about my own journey. Oh, gosh, that word really does bug me. It just bugs me due to its saccharine oversaturation, but I still end up saying it. Although, I just had a thought, actually, about why it bugs me, which is kind of perfect for now. Wisdom, was that you coming live on the podcast? I really dislike overused, memeified words like journey, because my experience of them has been seeing them as part of a like pastel coloured, swirly fonted, soft and whispery and floaty, meadow walking, yoga doing, flower arranging aesthetic of peace or progress or something, which is unrealistic and, for me anyway, quite undesirable. And it's that kind of overstated, baroque-esque faux peace vibe that sends the rest of us into puddles of comparative despair when we notice ourselves crying over an unhappy-looking seagull out of the window of a dirty bus that we're riding, or wearing ripped jeans and listening to some rather dirty industrial techno, or a scathing political satire podcast, instead of smiling beautifully at our homegrown parsley in a floaty pastel dress, and maybe lighting a candle and doing a meditation for unhappy seagulls everywhere. Now, I'm completely overgeneralizing, but this is a nod to the unreasonable expectations that we innocently set on ourselves, but also the way us humans tend to think, without question, and often with social media algorithms as our only source of so-called evidence, that certain states or things or journeys, I'll say it again, the word that took me onto this side rant, that those states or things or journeys or whatever look a certain way. And that's what we're debunking in this two-parter, the messy, imperfect, strange, dirty bus window way that life can look as we traverse new ways of seeing and being in the world. Okay, I forgot what I was going to say before I went on the side rant, but it will pop up again if it's important, I suppose. So let's just get on with some debunking. So the first part was a while ago now, so let's have a quick recap of the myths that we covered last time. Everyday annoyances and inconveniences will not bother us, and we will float through our days unruffled and serene like beautiful swans on a crisp lake. No. In order to experience lives of greater peace and freedom from anxiety, we must have a profound insight, realization or epiphany, or encounter some kind of other mind-blowing catalyst or special event. No, definitely not. Anxiety will gradually decrease in a systematic and incremental manner, revealing an ever-deepening sense of inner peace until anxiety completely disappears. Hell no! To have less anxiety and more peace, your thoughts will change. You will have better thoughts, more benevolent, peaceful thoughts, and thoughts about circumstances or things or people which seemed to make you anxious before will now magically be transformed into loving, wisdom-filled appreciation of that thing. Definitely not. Now, on to yours. I was going to explore them individually with you, kind of like I did in the last episode. But as I was going through the ones you sent in, I realised that the debunking part was kind of repetitive, as the myths only masquerade as truths due to the same underlying assumption, which I kind of touched on accidentally there with my side rant before. But it's that there's one right way and many wrong ways when it comes to less anxiety, overthinking, worry and stress, and more peace, calm, clarity and loveliness. And that's just not true. So I grouped them together, the main themes, and we'll talk about them now. And then after that, we're going to have another talk about what's really going on here. And what the essence of the good shit is in all this myth busting, and why I'm even under a blanket staring at a cushion, if it's going to help you at all. Okay, sound good? Let's roll. It's okay for the big things to make us anxious, but if we are truly making progress, the little things won't bother us. Okay, I received this one with a few different versions, like it's okay for new situations to make us anxious, but familiar or habitual ones won't anymore if we are improving. This is a great one and so common. It reflects to me the systematic and linear way that we think that humans do progress or make improvements or whatever we want. Like, we think that having less anxiety is kind of like learning a language or similar skill, that will nail the common greetings quite quickly, but more complex sentences will be harder and take time. But our experiences of thoughts and feelings are not linear or systematic. And in my own humbly offered opinion, it's the assumption that they somehow ought to be, which is the crunchy bit. Our current landscape of psychological treatment and care has sprung up with this and other assumptions at its core, which has led to the towering human-constructed mess of models and frameworks and diagnoses and disorders that we see today. And this is not to say that they're not helpful sometimes, but let's take a big step back so that we can see the nuance of it all. I highly recommend the podcast Psychology Has It Backwards if you want to explore this point a little more by yourself. It's hosted by the incredible Judy Sedgman and Chris Heath, who have also been on the show, which was a bloody great episode, if I do say so myself. Okay, back to this thing of little or familiar things not bothering us, but bigger or newer things might. So, quite ironically, I found it's often the opposite. Maybe because we have a ton more historical thoughts and story, which is the same thing, around the small or habitual thing. An example might be social anxiety of some kind. We may be frustrated that we still mumble and blush with our boss when we see them in the coffee room every day, and we think we should be over it by now if we really are progressing. And again, watch out for words like progressing. But why should we? If anything, there's more history and thought scaffolding to soften and release around that, which could take time, or it might happen quite quickly, who knows? But we are keeping it in place by thinking it should have gone away by now. And meanwhile, we might be greeting our boss's boss in the lift with a smile and chivalry small talk without even thinking about it. Now, that's a turn of phrase, right? Without even thinking about it. But that's a big, big, big clue pointing to the distinction that we're talking about here. We may not even notice this interaction, so effortless it may be, and we still focus on the coffee room. Now, this is just an example for illustrative purposes, by the way, and if you don't have a coffee room or lots of bosses walking around, then that's fine. Okay, next one. We need some kind of spiritual resonance, connection, experience, understanding, or practice to feel peace. Now, there is a spiritual foundation to the conversation that we have on this show about how we experience life, the nature of thoughts and feelings and inner guidance and our connectedness and all of that. But I try and avoid using the word spiritual, spirituality, as I think the words themselves have been conceptualized and commodified to become all but unrecognizable from the simplicity to which they point. Okay, saying it another way, at the heart of the things we talk about around here, there is a foundation of, or a recognition of, or an appreciation for a greater ubiquitous intelligence or energy or something. I simply cannot put it into words. But that transcends our ephemeral experience of thoughts and feelings. I like to call it life itself, or the nature of life, or just nature, as these feel very simple and lovely to me. But it, whatever it is, and it's not an it, it goes by many other names, some which mean different things to different people as well, like God or consciousness or source or Tao and many, many, many others. And this energy thing, or life, or nature, or whatever your word is, has been recognized throughout time and across religions and philosophies and schools of thought. Anyway, whatever this thing, and it's not a thing, there's a myth that we need to have some kind of special connection to it or experience with it in order to have more peace, like a belief or a ritual or a practice or an understanding, or something like meditation, or an experience of oneness, or some kind of transcendental felt sense of a connection to this something something. But the truth is, you don't need to have any explicit sense of connection or oneness or spiritual something something, or to have had any specific experience. And you don't need a meditation practice or a prayer ritual or anything at all in order to feel more peace and ease and more freedom from anxiety and worry. Although, and here are the darn words getting in the way of actually sharing ideas, but what seems a bit more accurate to me than saying that you don't need to have had an active spiritual something or awakening or even be pursuing that, whatever it means to you. But your connection with this thing you think you may not have a connection to exists inherently. You already are life itself, the energy of all things, God, consciousness, source, the universe, whatever. And even as I say those out loud, I can tell that I bristle a bit at some of them over others. So if that's you, just kind of notice that lightly. It doesn't have to mean a single thing. And you are held by that, whether you know it or not, and you have the exact same natural state of peace and ease, whether you know it or not, and you think over this natural peace with your own human thoughts, whether you know it or not, just like everyone else, whether they know it or not. So, very simply, you do not need to connect with some divine being, meditate, pray, go to church, or attend religious or spiritual ceremonies, have an awakening experience, know what awakening is, feel oneness, or any of that in order to feel more peace. But if you want to do any of that, great. Here's a big bundle. We had quite a few myths masquerading as truths come in around certain emotions or activities, and if we are truly on our way to less anxiety and more peace, then we wouldn't do or have them. According to myth, peaceful people do not get angry. They do not have untidy houses. They do not shout at their kids, ever. They do not eat processed food. They do not experience frustration, anger, or jealousy. They do not listen to punk music, heavy metal, or utterly filthy drum and bass. They do not go to CrossFit. They never break the speed limit. They do not think, fuck off, when someone knocks on the door. They do not drink faux coffee drinks, such as caramel lattes. They do not snap at their spouse, and they never lie, even little white ones. So thanks for all of those. And all of this is utter, utter, utter bullshit and complete myth. So it seems like a long list to just dismiss as myth. But if we take a closer look, they're all the same thing. The meta myth from the mega myth and all the other myths in this two-parter is that we misguidedly believe that what we do, what we think, or how we feel can tell us anything at all about our progress or success for a campaign that doesn't exist. Said another way, some of us spend a lot of time worrying about achieving something which is impossible to get wrong by using markers that have nothing to do with the thing we think we are measuring. Said another way still, as I really want this to be clear, everything you do, say, feel or think or anything like that cannot add to or take away from your intrinsic peaceful core, but you can think it does. As the power of our thought is infinite, and we all misuse it because we are silly billies that live in a temporal society obsessed with comparison, judgment, measurement, and results. As the wonderful Dr. Jack Pransky says, all we are is peace, love, and wisdom, and the power to create the illusion that we are not. Isn't that brilliant? To wonder or fret whether you're making so-called progress is the very thing that may prevent you from feeling such a thing as progress. It's so bloody normal to compare and judge and analyse as a human, but what happens when you don't? Well, I just thought that the first thing that you'll probably do, you'll probably find that you'll be comparing and judging and analysing how well you are not comparing and judging and analysing. But what about after that? I'd love you to just ponder that. Notice too that a feeling of inadequacy, frustration or similar is like any other feeling. a temporary state. It's a moment in time, an ephemeral experience like all other feelings, informed by thoughts that change, that are fickle, infinitely variable, inconsistent, and not controllable at all by you. The feelings of inadequacy or not making progress, or however you're describing it to yourself in your mind, they're going to come and go. And notice that, like, isn't that kind of cool? They move and morph and arrive and leave without your doing anything. It seems a bit unreliable to stake so-called success on such capricious, whimsical energy, does it not? Okay, let's go see anxious Alice. Hey Alice, what have you been hearing in this two-part conversation about myths and misconceptions? Alice looks up with surprise. How did I suddenly get under a blanket with you, Siobhan? Never mind that, Alice. Share what you've heard. Well, Alice says, it's like you're saying everything is a myth, or that people can be whatever state and have whatever experience, and it doesn't mean anything about their anxiety journey or recovery or path to peace, or whatever people are calling it. But that kind of seems too easy. Alice, I bloody love you, and I love what you're saying because I think a lot of people think that. But my simple answer to that is, well, why does it have to be hard? What if it is easy and hard is something that humans make up to prescribe value to something in our productivity-driven capitalist society informed by an industrialized Protestant work ethic? Or something like that. Okay, shall we wrap up? So what I'd love for you to ponder from this two-parter is the possibility that progress along a journey to more peace and less anxiety is firstly a thing that we make up to begin with, innocently and subconsciously, that there is a journey at all. And secondly, that how the made-up journey should go is very different than how you may expect. Even if you hadn't actually consciously considered what you expected, like we all do about everything, and instead our unattended expectations pile up in the corners like cobwebs until we're trapped in the cobwebs and can't escape. As best you can, try and spot the made-up assumptions and expectations that your human brain has created for you. Okay, thank you so much for hanging out with me today. If you do like the kind of things that we explore on the show, then consider popping your butt onto my friends list to get an email from me every month or so with the latest updates and free stuff and bits and bobs like that. And if you are really struggling with stuff at the moment, I have heaps of free resources on my website, head to siobhanfrill.com, and you don't need to be my friend to access those. Otherwise, I'll see you next episode. Bye! Thank you so much for listening. This is the part where I ask you to share, review, and subscribe to the show. So if you go and do that, I would absolutely love it. If you have thoughts or questions or insights about this episode or anything really, come and share them with me on Instagram at Siobhan Friel or visit me at siobhanfriel.com. See you next time.